This is part two of Riddle of Life from a talk given by Master Kirpal Singh in Hindi at Sawan Ashram, Delhi, India. The wise and the learned may be conversant with sacred texts so far as language goes, but cannot dip into the deepest depths lying much below the surface, and therefore our association with them does not and cannot give us right understanding nor any contact with the truth of which they speak. It is nothing but a propaganda work undertaken as a means of livelihood. One may earn his living by plowing land, and another may do so by plowing books. Light comes from light, and life from life. One who himself is living in darkness of the dead material world cannot take us out into the light of God in us, no matter whether we are Hindus, Muslims, Sikhs, or Christians. God's light is the life of all, and we live by it. We have to apprehend it at a level higher than that of our physical being. We can do so only when we come into contact with a perfect master who has access to the various mansions of the Lord, astral, mental, and spiritual. These are the correct teachings of the scriptures that speak endlessly of the glories of Sant Satguru. What does he tell us? Recognize man as man, apart from the social religions to which he may belong. This, then, is the first lesson that we get. A man may be a brahmachari, a student of Brahm Vidya, or a jatadari, one with unkempt long hair, or a recluse living in a forest cave. It makes no difference at all. Man is man, gifted with body, mind, and soul, the all-pervading soul, refulgent in one and all alike. All of us are conscious entities, depending upon the spirit and power of God within each and every being, human or otherwise. Just consider that we are dwellers in a prison house, with 9 portals all flung open. Can we escape from this prison house if we may choose to do so? No, we cannot, however hard we may try. There is a controlling power in us, which is keeping the body and soul together for an allotted span of time. We escape from it only when the controlling power withdraws from within us. This power is our mainstay. It is only the knowledge of God power that makes known to us everything, leaving nothing else to be known. To know the True One truly should be our only aim. This is called right understanding of the human. He who understands rightly would begin to think rightly, speak rightly, and act rightly. Righteousness in living prepares the ground for the higher life, life above the senses and mind. All this and much more can be achieved in the human life, which is a rare blessing. We can solve the riddle of life right now and here. All promises in the future to come will not be of any avail. Trust no future, however pleasant, is what the sages tell us. We have a golden opportunity to come in actual contact with truth, and we must make the most of the living present with us. All social orders and religious books speak of the value of satsang. Until we are able to meet a perfect master, we must understand the higher values of life and try to live by them. This is the first step in the right direction. The next is to do satsang, but how? One who is one with truth can make us do likewise. You know, in this age, there is no dearth of preaching. Everywhere you see platforms and pulpits from which our preachers give tall talks and make loud professions. With all this, what is the result? Are we in any way near the basic truths of life, or far away from them? Nearer the church and farther from God is what we experience in our daily life. All of us suffer from lack of love, and there is nothing in common to bind together people of different religious denominations. Love is the essence of God, yet we have not known it. Instead of coming nearer to each other, we are drifting away from one another. A perfect master unites all mankind in the silken bonds of love and brings them together at one platform. This is the essence of Sant Mat, or the path of the masters. This is the common meeting ground where all humanity can get together. Let us now consider a psalm of Guru Nanak. A perfect master gives us a sage counsel. From him, we learn of universal love. Who is a perfect master? He is a man of realization and sees the hidden hand of God working all around him. He has become a conscious co-worker of the divine plan. The Gurbani, speaking of Satguru, tells us, "Know ye that a perfect master has an all-embracing catholicity," which means universality or inclusiveness. "In his presence all sit together as brothers and sisters in God. His appeal is not to this or that sect, but to the entire world. He is not concerned with social and religious labels with which we adorn ourselves. He looks on us from the level of the soul, as ensouled beings, but helpless under the crushing influence of mind, matter, and material things. He pities us in our sad predicament. As we are entangled in the meshes of the world, he tries to take us out. He tells us how to rid ourselves from the forceful pressure of senses and sense organs, and how to separate the mind from them. And last but not least, how we may untie the knot between the spirit and the mind." His is a practical approach to this subject, and his way is one of inversion by means of self-analysis. He demonstrates to us in a scientific way as to how this can be done. Like a master scientist, he takes us into the laboratory of the mind and shows us how this can be achieved. Seeing is a basis of all belief and needs no argument. He is keen to make a saint of us like himself. There is a world of difference between a touchstone and a saint. One may transform base metals into sterling gold, while the other casts us in his own mold. It is not a subject of mere theorizing. Theory, no doubt, precedes practice, but if it cannot be put into practice, it is of no avail. At present, we may find sweet pleasures in sense enjoyments. We have not yet known higher pleasure than these that are just of ephemeral nature and have a taint of bitterness at the core. our sincerest laughter is with some sorrow fraught. Do we really enjoy these pleasures, or do the pleasures enjoy us? Again, how long can we enjoy these sensory pleasures? Ultimately, either they are snatched away from us, or we are forced to leave them. With all our bitter experiences that follow in the wake of pleasure, we still run after them, and in the end, fall a prey to them. Wide is the gate, and beautiful is the way of the world, and recklessly we plunge headlong to our doom. The way round to happiness is different from that of worldly pleasures. It is more alluring and more lasting than the other. Each and every one, whatever his calling, can pursue it. A Jat, like Dana, successfully trod this path. A butcher, as Sadhana was, could contact the power of God. Even a prostitute, like Ganika, turned a new leaf and found the Lord. We are not in any way worse than most of them. Cannot we become the devotees of the Lord? It is just a question of longing and desire. We go the way the mind leads us. Like an astute pointsman, we have to change our course of life. For this purpose, we shall have to find some awakened soul. He would change our angle of vision and make us see things in their proper light. He gives us something sweeter, something more lasting, and really beneficial. Once we get a taste of the elixir divine, we lose our appetite for the pleasures of the world. I had a great longing for God realization. I was a voracious reader. For days and nights I would read books to find something tangible that would help me in my search. But it was all a wild goose chase. The more I read the books, the more I got determined to get what these preached, emphasizing the all-pervasive nature of God. He was at once immanent and transcendental. But how was I to get to reality that was said to be omnipresent? The scriptures could not give me any experience of that power. Howsoever good the books may be, they are yet a mighty bloodless substitute for life. Bulle Shah, a Muslim divine, says, "Why carrieth a donkey's load of books on thy head? These shall not give thee anything beyond a headache." Thus we see the fruitlessness of bookish knowledge. The empty words have no substance in them, and they would fail miserably in delivering that of which they speak. Bulle Shah goes on to explain, "From the words come to the word, and leave off the endless circles of idle talk." We can raise a rich harvest of love from the soil of the hearts. Books only speak of love, love of a lower order that is not even skin deep. Love knows no exposition. It neither grows in fields, nor is it a marketable commodity. It springs from the heart of one and penetrates into the heart of the other, and goes on expanding evermore. Tulsi Das says, "The reading of scriptures does not make one a pundit. A pundit is one who only knows the quintessence of love." All the scriptures exhort us to love God and to love His creation. But have we learned this simple lesson? No. We have no doubt become learned and are able to seek volumes of love. But unfortunately, our hearts are bereft of love, and we stand high and dry as ever before. A loving heart wins over even enemies. but we, on the contrary, find that even our friends are getting estranged from us. Why is there so much unrest in the world as we see today? We are living in a state of perpetual fear of each other. May we know who have sown the seeds of distrust and discord amongst us. You would excuse me if I say that it is all the work of the learned and the wise, with no experience of the God power pervading in all of us. How did Pakistan come into being? The power-hungry politicians played upon the ignorance of the masses, with the result that lakhs of poor people had to pay with their life blood in the wake of unprecedented riots and interminable exodus of populace from one side to the other, creating problems which have still to be settled. At one time, long before the partition of India, Hazur Baba Sawan Singh Ji went to Multan in the wake of serious communal riots. People from all communities came to hear him. After the discourse, the leaders of the various communities approached Hazur, saying, "Hazur, you could have avoided all this bloodshed and loss of life and property by coming to the riot-torn town earlier." What I mean is that saints come to unite mankind. Their mission is one of love and not of hatred. Love brings in peace and concord. If we really love the Lord and are in search of Him, there is no other way to find Him except through love. Love is the only cementing force for the children of God. This, then, is the right lead the saints give. The Holy Word alone is truth, and truth is the richest merchandise. The Word is the all-pervading spirit and power of God, upholding the entire universe. Whatever is of the Word. There is no place where Word is not. Human birth is a great blessing. It is in the human body that we can think of and practice the Word. This is the summum bonum of life, and can be achieved in the company of saints. If you are really a seeker after truth, you shall have to go to a master of truth. He will explain truth in very clear terms, and wherever necessary, support his statements by apt quotations from the scriptures to which we are so closely attached, emphasizing at the same time that the books by themselves would not give the actual experience. Tulsi Sahib has said in this context, "We may read the Vedas, the Puranas, and master the Vyakrans, and to what end? Far from gaining anything, we get lost in the wilderness of the words, losing our very soul. A parrot-like repetition would never draw the spirit out of body consciousness and contact it with the Word. We are living on the plane of the senses, and the spirit attached to the mind is flowing out into the world. We have to apply a reverse gear and turn our attention upward within us. This is what all the sacred books proclaim. And yet, they cannot help us in the process of withdrawal from the world without to the world within. So it is said, ever since we are reveling in the world on the sensual plane, bound to the scriptures inextricably, we know not the way out to happiness." The holy books are valuable treasures coming down to us from our ancestors. We have a very rich heritage worthy of our respect and reverence. But mere reading of the scriptures without understanding their true import is just like irrigating a sandy desert. Guru Nanak gives a beautiful pen picture of this helpless situation. One may read a cartload of books and carry a heavy load on his head. All such studies forge but strong fetters and keep one bound therein. One may read endlessly from year to year and from month to month, nay, every moment of his life. O Nanak, only one thing counts, and all the rest but make one self-conceited. There is nothing wrong about learning where there is something good. It is something that one must develop in the first instance. It is an additional embellishment with a man of practical wisdom who has access to inner regions. With the ready aid that the learning provides, he can present the subject beautifully, like a great artist. Even if a saint does not have any literary degrees, he would still do full justice in his own simple language and in a style all his own, inimitable and homely. On the contrary, a purely learned person, however literary he may be, if he has no inner access, will not be able to impart right understanding to his audience. Sheikh Sadi of Shiraz likens such a person to a donkey with a merchandise of learning on his head. Similarly, Guru Amar Das compares such a one to a ladle that goes to prepare the pudding but does not get any taste of it. Hence the need of a God-man to lead on the God-way. God-way is something very precious and inestimable. How to get on to the God-way and to tread it safely and securely is what the God-man indicates and helps us to move along the boulevard. All this and much more is the work of the Guru or the Living Master. But for this, one has to completely surrender to the will of the Guru and follow his commandments without rhyme or reason. One must empty himself of his ego personality so as to absorb in self the holier and the healthier influences of the higher order coming down in the form of radiation from the Master. It is only the empty vessel that can be filled with the life-giving rainwater coming down from the heavenly heights from which the Master speaks. It is said that when Dayanand, later on Swami and Maharishi, went to his guru, Virjanand, in the garb of a great scholar, with books on ancient wisdom, the guru said, "Dayanand, I would give you something which is not in the books that you are carrying. If you want to learn anything from me, you shall have to throw all these books into the river Yamuna." As Dayanand was keenly desirous of gaining God knowledge, he just bowed his head and did as he was commanded by his preceptor. This is called Gur Bhakti, or unstinted devotion to the Master. Dayanand was greatly proud of his guru and acknowledged his debt to him. Later on, when he came across so many self-styled gurus, he could not but decry them vehemently. I remember to have read in his biography that on one or two occasions, when the young scholar failed to understand the implications of his preceptor's teachings, he was subjected to corporal punishment. Do you know how the pupil submitted himself even to such harsh treatment? Upon getting a beating from the guru, he would begin massaging the guru's hands, saying, "Master, my skin is rough. Your tender hands would get hurt, and I must rub them." Extreme love is the essence of devotion or Gur Bhakti. It is therefore necessary that when you find a God-man, you must go to him in all humility and do not begin talking of your personal attainments. These have to be set aside for the time being. What you are, you are. No one is going to take away your attainments. Here, one has to blank out his mind so as to draw in what comes from the higher level of the Master, beyond the range of the mind and the intellect. The trouble with us is that we would not like to go to a person with superior knowledge and understanding, especially divine knowledge. If at all we do go, we carry our pride with us, pride of wealth, possessions, or learning. Pride, as you know, goeth before a fall. Do you know that a godly person cannot be purchased by all the riches and power you may have? It is said, "He is too shrewd to enter in, but may come if he so wishes." He cannot be forced to step in either by force or by riches or by supplications. It is a question of harmonizing our level with the Master's. As he talks to us at our level, we should try to rise up to him. It is only when we come to a common alignment that we can benefit the most. At cross purposes, we cannot gain anything. This is the only way to understand his teachings that are of a higher order. The truths that he inculcates are the most ancient, and with attention, we can easily understand them. By unnecessary trying and comparing notes on our own level, we confuse the issues, and at times make confusion worst confounded. Whatever he says is to be taken in the context in which it is said. He is, after all, presenting an old wine in new bottles. And moreover, to convince us, he produces old bottles as well, to show that they too contained the same wine that he is doling out. The old scriptures in this way come as handy aids to him. This renders his task a little easier. But mind that, he uses them for our sake only because we are in one way or another scripture bound. All that we need to do is to attend to his talk wholeheartedly. For this, we shall have to surrender our heart, mind, and intellect. He who sells his heart and mind to the Guru, all things shape themselves to his benefit. You may know the story of Raja Janak and Rishi Ashtavakar, the gnarled sage. Do you remember what fee the master demanded for imparting divine wisdom? Body, riches, and mind. Do you realize that body and riches, too, are the reflections of the mind? Again, where the mind goes, the shadows also go away along with it. When you have thus blanked yourself, you become a befitting receptacle to imbibe the life impulses coming from the Master. This is the end of part 2, continued on part 3.